I'm Nikki Nolan, and this is Matter of Life and Debt, a show about people in the United States and their student debt. Today's episode, Scared to Debt. I talk with Michael Camoyne, the filmmaker of the new documentary series called Scared to Debt. The first episode, Sally May Not, just won the Audience Choice Awards at the Whistleblower Film Festival Summit. We discuss what got him so interested in the subject matter of student debt, as well as what he has learned about the unprecedented and frankly un-American way student loans have very little consumer protections. This is his story. Welcome to the podcast. It is so good to have you here. We're going to jump right into this. How did you get so interested in student debt?
By having two kids who are in high school. One will be graduating next year and the other one right behind her. Then I was introduced to the issue. A woman named Cynthia Pooler came to me and she said, you have to tell this story. Somebody has to tell this story. It's on student debt. And you have to meet this guy, Alan Collins. He's written this book, The Student Loan Scam. I enjoy books on tape and I would bike and listen. And I found myself getting angrier and angrier. So I had to bike some more. And when I finished the book, I said, okay, I get what you're talking about, Cynthia. Now, where's the money going to come for us to make this documentary? And she said, I'll write the first check. And she did. I knew what was coming next, and that is raising the money. From there, it was a lot of hustling and a lot of favors and a lot of donations. And I can't afford to go into debt to help people who are carrying, at that time, $1.5 trillion in debt. I won't be helping the cause. So we, you know, really needed to rely on other people to join us. And we were fortunate to be able to continue filmmaking for 5 years now.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it's been such a long project. But yeah, in the time that you have started recording, the $1.5 trillion has like, it continues to balloon and grow. And
it's 1.8.
Yeah. And I heard that it might even get up to $2 trillion under Biden's watch, which is wild if they don't do something about it. Someone yes. recently posted that.
No, I think that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. It's out of control. One of the guys that I met through Alan, a guy named Bob Hildreth, and you've watched the first episode, Sally May Not. Mm-hmm. And so Bob is this banker from the International Monetary Fund who describes the problem like Thelma and Louise. He said, the students are going over the cliff. The parents are going over the cliff. Colleges are going over the cliff, and Sally Mae's going to go over the cliff. There are no brakes on this system. I didn't know what he meant by that, no brakes. And then I discovered through Alan and others, in the absence of consumer protections, that there are no brakes on this system. Thus, the cost of college keeps rising. The cost of graduate school has no brakes. There's no limit on what they can charge for you to get that 2-year master's degree. Even if it puts you in debt for the rest of your life. I met another person. He actually contacted us, Tom Borgers. And he's a Wall Street financial fraud expert who was brought in to investigate the mortgage lending crisis in 2008. And one of my favorite lines in the movie, he says, he reminds us that if you are a banker, if you are a bank president and you lend money to people who can't afford it, in the housing industry, you could be locked up. You could be sent to jail. So let's go back to this premise of this lending system that has no brakes. No one's held responsible. The presidents of all of our colleges have no liability. The lenders have no liability. Nobody has any liability. It's all put on the students. And like in episode 23 with Alicia, nobody asked her whether or not she could afford these loans. And so many people are put into this situation. And nobody told her what her interest rate was going to be. So the more we're now communicating with all these experts, the more you realize that, yes, President Joe Biden is going to have a $2 trillion problem during his term if things don't change.
I really hope they do. We just heard this week or earlier last week that they've extended the pause. And that's just like kicking the can down the street.
You're absolutely right. I said the same thing to myself. I was like, okay, yep, we're going to punt on this, right? Kick it down the road.
It's really wild because we already have at least two servicers, Fed Loan being one of the major servicers who has like not even renewed their contract. And It's just a hot mess. Somebody on a previous episode described the student debt system as being just as complicated as the tax system, but with no interface to it. No TurboTax, no nothing to interface or understand the system. And I thought that was an interesting visual for sure. It's just so complicated.
Right. And the other thing that makes it complicated is, at least for borrowers, and Ralph Nader mentioned this to us when we were interviewing him at the American Museum of Tort Law, which he created in Connecticut. And he says, when you're on campus, you have the ability to organize. You have the ability to communicate with each other. As soon as you graduate, a lot of those natural ways of communicating with each other just dissipates quickly. And maybe you have a small handful of classmates that you're still in touch with. But very rarely do borrowers share their stories because they're embarrassed, ashamed. Mm-hmm. And that's why I so support what you're doing here, because this is a place where people can realize that they're not alone. And it wasn't them. It's not their fault. The system knew what it was doing. And it was glad that you didn't ask any questions so that they can make money.
So much money. They're making so much money. Like, I think, like, I ended up paying 60% more than the amount that I took out. And some people I've talked, they took out 40, they pay back 170. Like, it's, that's compounding interest and all these things that they don't want you to know. Like, the less you pay, the more they make. The system is really set up for so many people to stay indebted revolvers. Andrew Ross was on my show and he was explaining what a revolver is, which are people who are just constantly in debt so that you can constantly make money off of people. And it's just like, we're creating this system because of student debt and the rising cost of everything else, which keeps people enslaved to the system.
It's no way, as people say, it's no way. Ralph Nader would say this if he were here. This is how we're bringing up the next generation in America, by enslaving them, when strapping them with tens of thousands of dollars in debt. There is no country that does this. There's no other country that does this, although the UK is now adopting our plan and they're starting to see similar results. So we're exporting this predatory lending system to the UK. What a shame. I wanted to say one thing. When Alan Collins introduced me to a good friend of his, and we're right there in the film, we go to Syracuse, New York, and he introduces me to a guy named Bob Chrysler. And Bob has been paying religiously, month after month, $155. And he realizes after 44 or 48 straight payments that the total never goes down. And I'm thinking about myself and my wife. If we ever got into a mortgage like that, where for 4 years, we never saw the total of our mortgage go down, we should run away from that mortgage. We should never be involved in that mortgage. That is like not the way to buy a house. Why is it okay to fund college that way? Why is it okay to add all that interest in there and many other really bad practices of lending that are just so predatory to young people who have no clue? And don't you love it when people say, well, everybody knew better? How would they know better? Nobody ever gave them any financial advice. The colleges never gave them financial advice. They should be held accountable.
I agree. I don't know how we're going to hold them accountable. We just need a whole new system where college is free and all the debt is gone. But I don't know how likely we are to get there.
I happened to listen to Josh Mitchell's book, The Debt Trap. He's a Wall Street Journal reporter. And I'm going to give away the ending. But one of his solutions, which I think is really noteworthy and worth exploring, and that is, and this doesn't have to do with canceling student loans. This doesn't have to do with free college, but to make the colleges accountable, let them hold the loans. So they become the bank, which they are. They just don't have any fiduciary responsibilities and they could care less. They could raise their rates $1,000 a year. They can raise interest and it doesn't matter because you're going to come through there and you're going to go and we got the next people coming in behind you. So get out of the way. But make the colleges hold the loans. Now, what does that do? It holds them accountable for putting you in a degree that then either they have to also help you find a job. Because if you can't pay back the loan, the college loses. Not the whole country. People don't know really what they're going to do with their lives when they go to college. There's only a handful that really know that what they're doing and they go out and do it. But even after school, after college, you change your career 5 or 6 times over the course of your lifetime. So knowing all those things, how can college be set up such that people can succeed afterwards, whatever discipline they've chosen? Make it affordable. Why is it so unaffordable?
With doing this film, what has now been the impact of student debt on you and your perspective?
Well, I really appreciate you asking that question. The impact on me is one emotionally where I'm like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do about this? What can I do about this now that I know this? And the answer I have is, let me tell the other 5 episodes of this series, Scared to Debt, because I believe when parents realize, and they've watched this program, that they spent their life savings. I had a recent person doing an interview with a dental specialist, and her son just completed school. And he says to her, well, that was a waste of $250,000. If college students have that much awareness, I hope that parents realize that they've been saving since their kids have been born to put them through college, but they gave their inheritance to a system that just pocketed the money. It didn't necessarily make their child better off. And when they realize that, and they realize that the presidents of public and private universities are making over $1 million, and then their senior vice presidents and administrators are making $1 million or $750,000. The president of the United States makes $400,000 a year. Why should publicly service funded colleges, whether private or public, make more? It's not like they have a bigger budget to manage than the president of the United States. So why? Yeah. Why is that allowed? Because it is. And that was part of how this was designed by a gentleman named Albert Lord, who, as you see in the documentary, when he retired, built himself a private golf course. What government employee gets to build their own private golf course after they're done? I mean, President Trump had his own golf courses beforehand, but and they may be coming to take one of those golf courses away based on what he might owe in his $750 in taxes that he paid, by the way, which many of us paid more than that.
So much more. I pay so much more.
So why is it that the president of the United States could file for bankruptcy 6 times and students who invested in themselves cannot? Again, that's where the breaks are missing. And that's what makes the playing field level. And when you bring Alan Collins on, he will tell you more about those things like absence of bankruptcy, statute of limitations, fair lending laws, which means everybody holds a stake in the game, the government, the lender, the student, the university. And right now it's all on the student. And that's just not a good, that's not a fair lending system.
You started off because you realized that your children are about to go to school and it was like, oh my God, this is a huge problem. Has anything changed about you in relationship to your children going to college?
So my daughter is looking at international studies, and we just went to Washington, D.C. earlier this summer, and she visited 4 schools. And she's looking at the campus and the programs and the internships. And I Google the school and the president. I find out that George Washington University, the president makes $1.5 million. His senior staff make $1 million. He's got 5 people at $750. He's got 4 people at $500. He's got 5 people at $400. He's got 5 more people at $300,000. And he's got 2 people at $200,000. And I'm like, I got to tell you, this is how much, this is where the tuition is going in this college. Mm-hmm. So take a look at that. But Georgetown University, American University, even Catholic University, all presidents make over $1 million. So here's my thinking behind this. It's sort of my, maybe you call it conspiracy, but here's what it takes to get an internship in Washington, D.C. today is a $70,000 to $75,000 a year bachelor's degree. That's how you get into our federal government, because these colleges hold some of the best internships into our government. What percentage of our population will really be able to become part of our government if the price tag is $280,000 after 4 years? So that's the way my brain is thinking. And to her credit, she is not, because we talk about this, she is not caught up in prestige. But I think she'll make a financial decision. Mm-hmm. But it scares me if we ever have to sign on to these student loans. So I'm paying attention closely to the U.S. Senate hearings led by Dick Durbin Tuesday, August 3rd, which would restore bankruptcy protections, which at least if you're floundering after 10 years, you could file for that. And nobody really wants to file for that because then you can't buy a house and you can't do these other things, which millions of student borrowers can't buy anyway right now because of their student loans. That debt disallows you, disqualifies you, and that holds back the housing market. That holds back family. And you look at the birth rate in this country, it's declining every year. People are not getting married. And one of the reasons why they're not getting married is because they're student loans.
So I feel like this is a good point to ask, like, what is your story? How did you get so involved with this documentary series?
I launched my company, Videos for Change Productions, shortly after I graduated with a master's in social welfare. And this was just before streaming media was coming into place. In fact, I remember putting my first video up on streaming in 1995. And you remember the internet, how clunky it was. But I felt that the power of telling stories could create change. And if done right, could move people to take action. And when this project came along and the choice became whether or not to explore it or not, I knew from experience that it would take a couple of years to finish telling the story. And here we are in year five. When we first started Videos for Change, we came up with a motto, and that is to create customized communications designed to impact audiences around the globe. And I remember having this motto. And so it was about finding subjects and topics that, if you could tell those stories, could create greater awareness and a shift in people's perspective of what they held to be true. Mm-hmm. And everywhere at that time, when this subject on student loans was being introduced, the media at that time was, this is a bad borrower problem. We didn't have the stories we have now. 5 years ago, a lot has changed. Okay. So the momentum started to pick up and there's a shift, but there's still a need to raise awareness because many people still believe that this is a bad borrower problem. And until we tell the story of what borrowers are trying to do to help themselves and what forces are acting against them and how the cards are stacked, not in their favor, the average person will not understand why America has $1.8 trillion. Until they understand that this is a failed lending system that has harmed people's lives, their livelihoods, and their family members.
So it started with you talking with Alan.
Once we had the green light to begin, in a documentary, you start by creating a demo, a 3-minute demo, and we shot Alan. This is really fascinating because I sat Alan down and it took us 2 days for him to tell us everything he knew. I wanted to know his personal journey. And the question that I asked him, I said, how did you know that there was a problem? Because here's a guy with 3 degrees in aerospace science out of USC, and he can't find work in his line of work. And that's when he goes into telling me his story about how he discovered the absence of consumer protections from student loans. He goes back home to Tacoma, Washington, and he gets a federal job through the Department of Transportation. And it, for him, he becomes intermediary to help small businesses learn to apply for federal jobs and opportunities. And that's where the federal government, you can't give a big job to a small company. They can't afford to take that on. So they have to take out a loan. So the government has a part of that responsibility. The bank has part of that responsibility. And the small business has that responsibility. And it was there that he learned about fair lending. Then his loans get thrown into default. And he starts investigating why this is so. And through his job, they send him back to Washington, D.C., where he takes trainings to better do his job back in Tacoma, Washington. Mm-hmm. And it was there that he starts to knock on doors of Hillary Clinton and starts to say, hey, are you guys aware of this issue? And he was able to get traction, and he gets Bethany McLean to write a story in 2005. And then he's on 60 Minutes in 2006. Mm-hmm. So our demo was, how do we start to raise awareness about what this story is going to be about? Mm-hmm. And gosh, how did we pull it together? We drove to Boston. I wanted to interview the people of Beacon Press who published his book. And I mm-hmm. wanted to find out why did they publish his book. And then while we're in Boston, we interviewed Bob Hildreth, who is with the International Monetary Fund and sits on the board of, I think it's Boston University. He's mm-hmm. graduated from Harvard, very well spoken. There's a woman that Alan keeps talking about. Her name is Catherine Fitz. She was on the board of Sallie Mae. Mm-hmm. She lives in Tennessee. So it took us 18 hours to drive to Tennessee. So we had to schedule that one. I think it was in 2018 that we went. But I knew it was like going to be an important interview. Mm-hmm. Because what happened to her life? I mean, she goes from Wall Street, being on the board of Sallie Mae in the early 90s, mm-hmm. before all the brakes are removed. But the writing was on the wall in terms of where this thing was heading. And she's the only person who we were able to talk to from inside Sallie Mae. So that was like, now we're like, wow, we are sitting on information that nobody knows firsthand. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what's going to be coming out in the subsequent episodes. But in the first episode, she appears and she makes these statements like, I don't know why anybody is still taking out student loans. The mafia gives you better odds on lending money to you. And this is from somebody who's inside. And it really, and it only got worse under Trump. And you're juggling this low budget effort with this $1 trillion problem. But we traveled to Boston, we traveled to New York, we traveled to Washington, D.C., where they host a protest with a debt ball. We traveled to Tennessee. While we're in Washington, D.C., I get to meet another colleague of Alan named John Oberg. Now, John is a New York Times whistleblower. He was an insider on the Department of Education who discovered that the lenders are overbilling the federal government by $1 billion. And it took 2 days to interview John. People don't want to hear from the whistleblower. Mm-hmm. They can easily find reasons to dismiss whatever they're saying. Like, hey, why can't you pay on your student loans? Are you a deadbeat? You're just milking mm-hmm. the system. And people don't understand the system. So mm-hmm. that's where Videos for Change hopefully can come in and shed some light on the fact, on some other facts that aren't being mm-hmm. reported. It's too complicated to tell in a 2-minute news story. It's way mm-hmm. too complicated. And until people get the bigger picture, as Bob Hildreth says, universities are going to go over the cliff. Where are you going to find thousands of students who can all pay $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 or $100,000 a year? You're going to have to get foreign kids to come in whose parents can pay in cash. And that's a finite amount of people. Mm-hmm. So in the documentary, I don't know if you remember the scene, and we spent a lot of time. I went through 3 animators, maybe 4, to get, mm-hmm. and it's not exactly where I want it, but it's close. But that scene where Bob is talking about colleges are like on surfboards, and it's the waves of student loans that goes higher and higher, and then they're way up here and they find themselves on a cliff, and then the tide's gonna go out. And they don't know how to get down. They don't know how to get down from $100,000 a year, because it's been, they just keep going up. And I just love that animation, because for the first time, it explains a very complicated situation that colleges are in. They don't know how to get down off of this. And everyone's worst fear is going to come true, that they're not going to fix this until they absolutely have to. And one of the things that Matt Taibbi shares with us is, because you need to understand that these loans are like soy in food. They've been woven. Good loans and bad loans have been woven in with other loans and repackaged and put out to market and resold. So you can never pull out the bad loans with what they needed to do with the mortgage lending crisis. So these things are all bundled in there. And now that we're in the pandemic, post-pandemic, before the post-pandemic, Brookings Institute put out a study that 40% of borrowers were in default. And now post-pandemic. Alan will say it's closer to, I think some people are saying it's 60%. Alan says it's closer to 80% that, you know, these loans are either in forbearance or default and may never get paid off.
It seems like you're just sort of like going from story to story to story and just realizing how large and interwoven student loans is within the society.
Well, you don't know in a documentary when to stop filming, but you have to at some point. And the pandemic kind of gave us that answer with everything being shut down. Now, I was able to take unemployment funds and put that towards the documentary. And people don't understand in the art world, it's really hard to be successful in grants. So that was like a grant. And that allowed me to hire an editor named Tracy Kring. And together with her husband, John, they began to sift through this footage and take my notes. I sat down and took a look at a 3-page, kind of an executive summary of Alan's story that I created in 2017. You know, after I sat down with Alan for those 2 days, I said, okay, this is where he's gone. Mm-hmm. From around 1999 or 2000, landing on 60 Minutes, publishes his book, I think in 2009. He's part of Occupy in 2011. Mm-hmm. And here he is pushing for bankruptcy reform. And that's kind of like the baseline of his fight to restore consumer protections. And then we started weaving all these other interviews in. Before I could really give the green light to my editors, I had to break it up. And I broke up that 3-page executive summary into 6 chapters. So episode 1, Sally May Not, answers, we hope, the question of whether or not, is this a bad borrower problem or is this a bad lending problem? In episode 2, we're going to drill down deeper with John Oberg. He was one of the early whistleblowers who discovered that the lenders like FIA and others that have recently shut down, they were overbilling the federal government in the form of $1 billion. And when he discovered this, his higher ups told them to put that down. So after he retired, he then further investigated the problem and was able to bring upon 9 lawsuits and won 7 out of 9 times, which is unheard of in whistleblower cases. And often what happens with whistleblowers is their life gets ruined. For many reasons, we need whistleblowers, but then society turns on them because there's a lot of people who are benefiting from the illicit action. In this case, it was overcharging the federal government, and he got the lenders to repay. Now, Betsy DeVos spent millions of dollars against him to get those companies. And that's how he lost the last 2 cases.
Wow.
Doesn't that say volumes about this, how messed up this is? Like, who really is looking after the borrowers? So after the whistleblower episode 2, we're going to go right now into Wall Street and understand the role that they played and how this compares to the mortgage lending crisis and what's different in the student loan debt crisis. And then fourth, we're going to look at colleges. And we talked a bit about that, just how they don't have any liability. And they have this ability, particularly in graduate programs, to just raise their rates beyond market value. Like I was told recently that you graduate from dental school at $280,000 a year. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Episode 5 is where now it's called Torts, Vets, and Suicide. And that looks at where are we going to put all these stories, this burden that students are carrying. And we're like, we're going to create an episode. And it'll be hopefully not, but it is depressing. But hopefully there we are weaving in solutions, at least allowing borrowers to feel heard so that they realize they're not alone and suicide does not have to be the answer to this. Episode 6 then goes to solutions. And one of those solutions that is hinted at in episode 1 is Slexit, student loan exit. Alan raises the question, has the country ever had a massive debt revolt and just walked away? And that's on the table.
It is.
And it should be on the table. This is like going back to the founding of the country of when the King of England lorded it over and was going to help people tax them an insane amount. And so they They threw the tea overboard in Boston Harbor, which brings us back to that first, that instinct of, I wanted to go to Boston to interview Beacon Press. And their office is right around the corner from Boston Harbor. And so it all lined up. And that's been on Alan's mind. It's the last resort. No one's trying to get over on the school. They just want to pay a fair amount. As many of your guests have reported, they've already paid the principal.
Yeah.
What's a fair interest rate? It's not what they're looking at. It's not 100%. That's a loan shark. And so in 16 short years, you saw college skyrocket. Now, here's an interesting thing that I learned, and I hope I got it correctly, from Josh Mitchell's book, Debt Trap. They created private loans to meet the 90-10 rule. The 90-10 rule is such that you had 90% in federal loans. You had to go and get 10% of your tuition from somewhere else. So they created private loans. They're, quote, non-government loans, but they could control the interest rate on that without informing you. They could charge you fees on those private loans. And that's how they got around putting you into a house you couldn't afford, basically. A student, a degree that you couldn't afford. So you and others and people we've interviewed signed on to those private loans. And they're not even on the table right now for returning consumer protections. They want to make more money and they will figure it out. And they have until Congress puts the brakes on this system. And I mean, look at the cost of college. I mean, that's the real thing that unites, I think, people right, left, and center, is that why does college cost this much? And can you really pay back these loans? Can that degree pay back these loans? So what's really interesting, for the first time in this country, again, Josh Mitchell points out, is that the debt isn't just transferred to the borrower, but now it's transferred on up to the parent and into their retirement. So it's going in a reverse direction, and that can only hurt the economy. And Alan will remind your listeners when he comes on that this is exactly what the founding fathers wanted to prevent when they put in a uniform system of bankruptcy in the U.S. Constitution. So to remove that from these student loans is the beginning of the downfall of this whole lending system.
So we're coming to the end. Is there anything that I didn't talk about that you want to talk about?
All students need to take action, and they need to know whether or not the president of their university has got their back. I haven't heard one president speak out about the absence of consumer protections on these loans. And there's a reason for that. So we can only gather they've been told not to speak. And I've had professors actually tell me that much, that, oh, we're not supposed to talk about that. So students really have to, again, your program here is supportive of borrowers, and hopefully they can feel empowered to take action.
So we're at the end. Is there anything that you want to promote?
Sure. I'd love to promote and encourage people to come visit us at scaredtodebtmovie.com. They can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Everybody can do something if people can contribute a cup of coffee, $10, $20 to the documentary, because we want to show all six episodes. And even if they can't contribute to the, they can share a tweet. They can share some of the videos. We want to wrestle this lending system to the ground. We're actually giving clips from the documentary away so that we can let people, and these are some of the juiciest moments, but we want people to know about this lending system now. And now's the time during this extended moratorium on student loans for us to help parents and students and families raise awareness and to be informed and take action. Write a letter to your college president. Ask them, what are they doing to help the situation? And could they stop being quiet about it? They're the ones who created it.
Yep. If people wanted to see your film, how might they, is it just going to your website and following you on Twitter to figure out where its screenings are happening? Or is there more of a goal to eventually get it completely out there with distribution and stuff?
There is a goal to achieve distribution. So all rights are available. Our next stop is the Morehouse College Human Rights Film Festival in September. We're in communications with other universities to host screenings. And there's a handful of film festivals that we hope choose our film this fall. But if folks really want to put together a group and host a screening, we'd be happy to talk about how to do that. And with virtual technology, that's not out of the question anymore, right? They can find me and others, contact us through our website at Scared to Dip.
Thank you so much for being here. It was so great talking with you.
Nikki, thank you for the opportunity and keep up the great work.
Matter of Life and Debt is produced by me, Nikki Nolan. Special thanks to F.A. Ackman for creating the music and mastering the audio. Additional support and thanks to Emma Klauber, who writes the information and transcripts about each episode. This podcast would not be possible without them. Visit our website for more information, matteroflifeanddebt.com, where you can listen, read transcripts, get additional context of the subjects you just heard about, subscribe absolutely for free. That website again, matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thanks again for listening.